Hi, I'm Miss Tyler, and welcome to this week's episode of Context for Kids, where I teach you guys stuff most adults don't even know, especially this week. If this is your first time hearing, or if you've missed anything, you can find all the episodes archived at contextforkids.podbean.com, which has them downloadable, or at contextforkids.com, where I have transcripts for readers, or on my Context for Kids YouTube channel, where I usually post slightly longer versions. So since the angels showed up on Abraham's doorstep, okay, he didn't have a doorstep. Before we get into Genesis 18, we need to talk about angels and messengers and men, because sometimes it can be hard to know what we're dealing with in the Bible because the same word is used to describe messengers who are human and messengers who are angels. Hebrew isn't like English, where we have a ton of different words. And a lot of Hebrew and Greek words can't be translated or understood by just using a dictionary definition. We have to look at the whole verse, and I've told you guys this before, so you know this. And sometimes we have to look at the whole chapter to know what they mean this time. And next time we see the word, it might mean something entirely different. If you're confused, then you're not alone, because grown-ups have to figure this stuff out too. And different Bibles use different English words to translate them too, which is why some Bibles say angels and others say messengers. It sure isn't easy translating the Bible. Not just anyone can do it. Maybe someday you'll be a language expert and you can do it, but not me. Nope. Now, the Bible has a lot to say about angels, but a lot of it's just very mysterious and confusing. It's not like there's a chapter totally devoted to angels, you know, just talking about them like, you know, a high school biology book all about angels, you know, and has diagrams of their insides. We don't have that. We have to filter through the entire Bible for clues, which means that unless someone knows the Bible really well, they probably have a lot of wrong ideas about angels. Fortunately, the guy who wrote the books that I love on this, Michael Heiser, he knows the Bible really well, and this is his specialty. And to make things even worse, outside of the Bible, there are even more beliefs about angels that have nothing at all to do with the Bible. Maybe you've heard that people become angels after they die, or that all angels have wings, or that there are angels who look like little babies who fly around in February shooting people with mini arrows, making them fall in love with each other. When I was younger, but still a grown-up, there were TV series like Touched by an Angel and Highway to Heaven, making it even more confusing. It's hard to separate what the Bible says from what we see in TV, in movies, from legends, or in books. And that wouldn't be such a big deal, but it makes what we see in the Bible confusing. And sometimes we picture things in our minds that have nothing to do with what the Bible actually says. Genesis 19 is the first time we see angels in the Bible actually called angels. And we're seeing them as normal-looking men who have messenger jobs, which means that they're doing jobs for God here on earth, either delivering messages or checking things out. We will see angels doing other things too in the Bible, like fighting battles and saving people. Really, an angel's job is whatever God tells them to do. Sometimes angels are in disguise, and sometimes they aren't. And when they aren't, they're really scary looking, and we have to be told not to be afraid. And when we look at some of the things people wrote about angels outside the Bible, we can see some pretty wacky ideas that came from their time of exile in Babylon and Persia. First of all, I want you to know that we aren't going to talk about the angel of the Lord, because that's different from ordinary angels. The angel of the Lord is God somehow, but I don't really understand it. Regular angels are heavenly beings, meaning they live where God is, and they can see God and talk to him and get orders from him and all that jazz. We know from the Bible that angels were created to be angels by God. When people die, they don't become angels. People who are dead are still people. And when Jesus comes back, they will come alive again. They will still be humans, but with perfect bodies that can't get sick and die anymore. It's awesome. Although Jesus said we will become like angels when we die because we won't be getting married, being like something isn't the same as being that thing. For example, I am like Taylor Swift because I'm a woman, but that's just about where it ends. So we're like, but not like angels. In fact, angels are superior to us. They live forever once God creates them, unless God ends their lives, and so they are smarter and wiser and know a whole lot more than we ever will. The word angel is really just a job description for heavenly creatures. We get the word angel from the Greek word angelos, and the Hebrew word is malakim, but those words mean the exact same thing, messenger. That's where it can get confusing because angelos and malakim, messengers, can also be human beings. So we have to read what the Bible says and pay careful attention to know when we're dealing with an angel from heaven or a human being carrying a message as a messenger or priest or prophet. In the book of Revelation, at the end of the Bible, the writer is sending messages to the angels of the seven churches in modern-day Turkey. Are those angels humans or from God? Well, it doesn't say, and it could be both, although since there are seven letters, it sounds like they're humans, not like angels need letters from humans, right? And angels deliver messages from God and not from people. Otherwise, we'd save a lot on postage. Angels have better things to do than deliver our messages. Now, sometimes, depending on where we are in the Bible, there are different names given to God's angelic messengers. Sometimes they're called ministers, or Daniel calls them watchers, or hosts, or mighty ones, when they're fighting angels, and mediators. But in the end, no matter what they're called, they all have the same job, which is to do whatever God tells them to do. But angels aren't robots. They have what we call free will, which means they can decide to say no. And there are stories in the Bible about angels who said no, and who even went to war against God and got chucked out of heaven. Now, we'll talk about that more later. Angels aren't as much trouble as we are, but they can still be rebellious and get themselves into trouble. Not so much like in the movies. Those angels are kind of hopeless and silly, like in It's a Wonderful Life, which is a great movie. But the angel is silly. Angels have very important jobs. Besides carrying around messages, some are part of God's heavenly council, and they listen to God make plans and even offer suggestions for what he can do. Sometimes God even asked for volunteers for jobs, like when he needed someone to trick an evil king by telling his false prophets what the king wanted to hear instead of what his true prophet was saying, because the king wasn't listening to the true prophet. Sometimes God needs an army to protect his people from invading armies, and he sends angels. And because human soldiers can't kill angels, that's a super bad deal for the human soldiers. If you ever saw the last movie of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, they had a ghost army in it that no one could fight because they were already dead. But angel soldiers aren't dead, which is good because that would be totally gross and scary if that could actually happen, which it can't. Sometimes, though, we see angel armies fighting against the armies of Satan, mysterious creatures called demons. That makes the fighting very difficult. The angel in charge of God's armies is named Michael. The angel who seems to be in charge of the super important messages is named Gabriel. And that's another important thing because not all angels are the same. Some seem to be bosses over the others. Although angels don't have human bodies, the Bible shows us times when they disguise themselves as human beings, like in Genesis 18, where the two angels were traveling with God, and they were all pretending to be human travelers. Lot's not even going to notice that they aren't human until things get really ugly and dangerous. And they are very fast. Because the first thing we will notice about the angels in chapter 19 is that they traveled somewhere between 18 and 40 miles from Abraham's camp in Hebron all the way down to Sodom in just a few hours, and that is super fast. Not everything we would call an angel is actually the same thing. We are mostly used to angels disguised as people in the Bible, and sometimes they're wearing white robes when people see them in visions, but there are also other created beings in heaven. Cherubim and seraphim are created beings that we will find around God's throne and protecting Eden from invaders. They're scary looking, let me tell you. The cherubim aren't those chubby little baby angels with bows and arrows shooting cartoon characters in the butt to make them fall in love. You wouldn't ever want to see one because you'd be scared to death. I mean, they're guarding God's special places, so you wouldn't want them to not be scary, right? They have 2 to 4 wings with hands under their wings, and the sound they make when they're flapping their wings is just deafening, so loud. And they also have cow hooves for feet. And they have eyeballs all over their bodies and 4 faces. A human face, an eagle face, a lion face, and the face of an ox, which is kind of like a bull, but bigger and used for pulling plows and heavy farming stuff. Okay, you see one of these guys and you will definitely need to change your undies. Ain't nobody trying to get past them, and especially when they have swords, okay? But I don't think they actually need swords if they look like that. If you're brave enough to mess with those guys, then a sword isn't going to scare you either. We don't know nearly as much about the seraphim, except that they have 6 wings and seem to maybe be on fire, but that's debatable. They use 2 wings for flying and 2 for covering their faces and 2 for covering their feet. But sometimes in the Bible, when it talks about covering or uncovering your feet, it means putting on or taking off whatever is covering your private parts. Covering your feet is a funny way of saying you're going to the bathroom. Because otherwise, I have no idea why they would actually have to cover their actual feet with their wings unless they had super gnarly, dirty toenails. One thing that angels, cherubim, and seraphim all have in common is that they all praise God a lot. They sing about how wonderful God is, and they don't even seem to ever get tired of it. And because their bodies aren't like ours, their throats probably don't even get sore. When we get to the Psalms and even in Deuteronomy, we find out that when God made all the different languages at the Tower of Babel to keep people in Shinar from building that huge thing that was so small that God couldn't even see it without going down to look at it, which is one of the many hilarious jokes hidden all over the Bible. Well, Moses and the people who wrote the Psalms said that God gave 70 angels the responsibility to guide and watch all of those new nations. They were supposed to watch over the people because God wanted to save them all. But when the people started worshiping those angels as gods, the angels didn't do anything to try and stop them, which is really bad. But that is just one of the ways that angels are like us. We can decide to do the right thing or the wrong thing. And these guys were just not thinking straight. No way was this going to work out okay, right? Now, Daniel talked about how the archangel Michael was busy trying to fight one of these angels just to get a message through to Daniel after he prayed. Daniel called that angel the prince of the kingdom of Persia. And it took Michael, the head of all of God's armies, 3 weeks to get through. So this wasn't a person who was a prince, but a very powerful angel. You know, it's hard to understand why anyone who was that close to God could do such a thing, right? But it's easy to want to be worshiped. We all have to be careful, especially people in ministry. But as for normal angels, in addition to the jobs that we've already talked about, we see that they also patrol the earth like policemen, looking for things to report back to God. And we might ask ourselves, but doesn't God know everything? And although I think he does, he also likes to have others make themselves useful. I mean, really, God doesn't actually need us to do anything because he could just do everything himself, but he doesn't. And we don't know why. There isn't anything that we can do or the angels can do that God can't do himself, but part of how he likes to work seems to be involving others. God is very social, which means he likes to do things as a community, a whole group. I think that's really cool that God, who is so powerful, likes for the rest of us to be useful and feel needed. That makes us a lot different from the animals because we can do things that really matter, even though we can choose to do things that are also really terrible. Now, God values what we do, and that's why he gives us specific gifts. And the same with angels. And there are probably types of angels that aren't even mentioned in the Bible because humans don't come in contact with them, so it's not important. The universe, after all, is a huge place. Which brings me to how Jewish beliefs about angels changed over time, and especially after the exile. When we see angels in the Old Testament, they look like men, and they work carrying messages, fighting God's battles, praising him, and all of that. But after the Jewish people came back from their exile in Babylon and Persia, some of them began to write fiction. And fiction is stories that aren't true but are entertaining and tell us what people were thinking at certain times about different things. Many of these stories are about angels, and they are really imaginative. It seems as though they took what the Bible says about angels and mixed it together with the beliefs of the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks. Just, you know, everyone who was boss over their people for 500 years. You see, whenever you're part of a culture, and that's our context, the ideas from that culture rub off on you. If you go into a Christian bookstore in most of America, you will see art and figurines of angels who are mostly white with long blonde hair and blue eyes, which is so weird because why would angels have recessive genes? Hey, high schoolers, figure that one out for me, please. And they have huge wings and they are mostly women. That's how our culture sees angels here in America, and it's very different from what we see in the Bible, where they all look like guys without wings, and I'm betting they were all brown-skinned with brown hair and brown eyes so that they looked normal to Bible people. Let me tell you that blonde, white, blue-eyed angels walking around would have been super freaky. They didn't even have sunscreen back then. So, you know, how was somebody supposed to be that white? And yes, you know, people were usually scared when angels appeared to them. But no one talks about how they looked, so we have to assume that apart from being spectacular as angels, they would have been considered normal. Ancient Israelites had some kind of wacky beliefs about God before the exile, which is why they worshipped other gods and goddesses too. Even though God told them not to, they did it anyway. It seems like they figured God was the boss of all the gods, and so it was okay with him if they also worshipped the mother goddess Asherah, and Baal, who they thought was responsible for giving them rain, and Dagon, who they figured gave them lots of wheat and barley to eat. Now, after they came back from Babylon, they didn't do that again, and they knew there was only one God, but some of them found another way to believe almost exactly the same thing. Well, they wrote stories about how angels were doing all those jobs instead of other gods because they were angels, they didn't need to be worshipped and couldn't be worshipped. And so in these stories that were written in Greek and Aramaic, they came up with ideas about what they thought heaven was like and what things looked like wherever God is at with the angels working behind the scenes. And so you have these angels who are in charge of these warehouses where they store up the snow and the rain and the wind. They gave them fancy names like Uriel, Samlazaz, Kokablel, Badarel, Ananel, Zakiel, Samsapil, Sadarel, Turel, Jamjael, and many others. Of course, different people wrote the different stories at different times and in different places, and so the names they gave to certain angels never matched up with each other or their jobs either. And that's okay, because people understood that they were writing what-if stories, like, you know, sometimes we like to do. But these make-believe stories were incredibly popular. They influenced the way people saw things, and thought about angels even when those stories didn't line up with the Bible and usually didn't. But they weren't written to go into the Bible. It was a form of storytelling about things that were important to them and that they wondered about. And nothing was more important to them than the Bible. All people from all times have come up with some imaginative stories. Not everything the Jews wrote about ended up in the Bible because they came up with fun stories just like everyone else does. I remember once I was talking to someone who believed that these stories were inspired by God and they were true. And I had to tell them that they were meant to be fiction and that Jews sometimes wrote fiction. And the person asked me, well, why would they do that? And I answered, why wouldn't they write fiction? All humans write fiction because they all enjoy fiction. The important thing was that they knew the difference between their stories and their Bible, and they didn't confuse the two. If you talk to Americans today about what angels are like, they would probably give answers based on what they see in books, movies, TV, and art. Because that's our culture. If they're my age, they probably watched Highway to Heaven and Touched by an Angel. And hopefully they would know there's a difference between the Bible and entertainment. But if they don't, when they read the Bible, they might be adding things into what they see in their head that just aren't there in the story. We've talked a lot about that sort of thing going on with stories about Nimrod and Melchizedek that have nothing to do with the Bible or with history. And the stories mostly disagree with each other anyway. Angels have always been incredibly popular in stories all over the world because we are all fascinated by the idea that there are special invisible helpers all around us, and sometimes things happen that we can't explain without angels. Angels make us feel better and safer, and especially when Jesus goes around telling the grown-ups that the angels who watch over little children are always very close to God. And here's where we get to something confusing. The Old Testament, the Hebrew part of the Bible, doesn't talk about demons. But by the time of Jesus, they get talked about a lot. What are demons and where do they come from? Are they angels who went bad? And what about Satan? Is he really a fallen angel? There are as many stories out there about Satan and demons as angels. They just aren't as popular in wall art for nurseries and for bedtime stories. Like angels, we don't have a whole lot of information, so just like everything else in the Bible from Nimrod to Melchizedek, when there isn't a lot of information, people like to make things up for fun. So we don't know for sure if they were actually angels, but there is a very famous angel that we hear a lot about once Jesus starts to preach, and that is Satan. In fact, Jesus says that he was watching when Satan was cast down from heaven, and that, as the devil, he is the father of lies because all lies come from him. The word Satan comes from the Hebrew word that means accuser, someone who is always a tattletale, only worse. And the devil comes from the Greek word diabolos, which means slanderer, you know, someone who's always talking smack about other people and disrespecting them. And so we have to think that Satan, the devil, was once one of the angels guarding the Garden of Eden, and not really a snake at all, which is why he could talk, which makes a lot more sense. And he was in the garden, and that didn't worry the man or the woman, so maybe he belonged there, guarding it. The prophet Ezekiel in chapter 18 talks about a guardian cherub who was in the garden, who became wicked and even violent, so he was tossed out. That sounds like what Jesus is talking about, right? And of course, he saw it because he's always been with God and part of God and God and all that theological stuff. But that's good news for us because it means that Satan isn't like God. Satan is just another created angel. And so he can die just like any other angel. And he can also be beaten, which is what Jesus did when he died and went after him. I love you. I'm praying for you. Angels are super interesting, but understanding them takes a lot of study and research and a lot of getting rid of ideas in our heads from TV, movies, books, and the art down at the Christian bookstore.